Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Before we begin the regular part of our council meeting, we start each Wednesday by asking the folks here and that are watching this on TV is, how are the children? The reason we ask that question is that we know that when the children in a community are taken care of, the community is a better community. And each week we have folks come in and talk to us about issues around young people and children. And today we have Liam Ware and Fayan Nguyen. If you could come up, please. Both of these folks are in the Gateway to College program, and we'll start with that. So who wants to speak first? And please state your name when you speak.
I guess I'll go. My name's Liam Ware. I'm 17 years old, and like you said, I'm enrolled in the Gateway to College program, PCC. I'm here today to talk about second languages in schools. I think that's really important to learn. When I was 4 years old, I was in preschool enrolled at Belmont Academy, which is a private school, and part of their curriculum was to teach Spanish. So I got an introduction to Spanish at a really young age, and we learned, you know, little phrases like hola, ¿cómo estás? And agua, and, you know, little words and stuff like that, but the pronunciation stuck with me. And when I enrolled in public school at 5 in kindergarten, from that point and up till now, I haven't had a single schooling in any Spanish or second language that was worthwhile. I'm telling you this because a second language to me is more than just another way to talk. It's learning about a culture. My sister, she's in the fourth grade. She's enrolled at Richmond in the Japanese immersion program, and she's learning the language, but she's also learning about the history of the people there. And I think that's important to realize, you know, that we're all part of a, you know, larger world and stuff like that. So at the end of her fifth grade, she will have raised enough money through fundraisers to go to Japan and sort of see the culture firsthand from there, which is really important to her learning and stuff. The farthest I've been outside of the country is Vancouver, British Columbia, which isn't really that much different than Portland, if you've been there. So I think through learning a second language, my sister is also having many more opportunities that I don't get the chance to have. And I think I would like to end with the idea that if we all knew a second language, there might be more positive communication among groups of people in our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Fayan Nguyen. I live with my mom in the outer southeast Portland. My mom is actually diagnosed with secondary cancer, and she's terminal. I mean, she's still here, but she's doing alternative treatment. And I actually work a lot. I have 3 jobs, and I am a student.
How old are you?
I'm 17.
17.
Yes, and I go to school at PCC for Gateway to College program. I have school, I have work, and I also have to take care of my mom and her little puppy. And I split my time. It's very difficult, but I kind of manage because I learned actually from Gateway in one of my classes, time management, and it worked really well for me. I made the switch from high school to Gateway because high school was just, it wasn't my environment. It just wasn't working out because my mom was sick, and then, like, my mom doesn't have, you know, an income, so how to get a job, and so I just did the transition, and it's working really, really well. My goal, actually, I'm studying civil engineering, and I want to do international business as well, and my dream is actually to move to Italy and do civil engineering there.
Not stay in Portland?
No, and actually own a vineyard. And
lots of folks visiting you then.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about having a house there for me and my mom and the rest of my family. And Yeah, we moved here from Oregon 3 years ago from Santa Rosa, California. And my parents got divorced, and like out of all the states, Oregon is the only state that actually has a health care for my mom because she doesn't have, you know, an income. And so like I'm not really a big fan of like the whole healthcare system in the US, but I really love living here because my mom has that support from the state. And yeah, and I'm just like a really big education fanatic. Like I think education is so important. Like I emphasize it to all my friends all the time. I lecture all my friends about school. And I was like, you need a legitimate like reason to be successful. Because I always learn everything the hard way. So it was like, it's real that way. I think that the whole equal opportunity to education is really important, because just because high school didn't work out for me doesn't mean it, you know, doesn't work out for everyone else. But I think that everyone should have a choice, and there should be more programs and, you know, like other different kind of high school completion programs, because then everyone will be served. And, you know, because high school environment isn't for everybody, and sometimes school is just not the place for some people. So I think the diversity thing is really, really important.
Well, thank you both. I notice, Liam, that you are on the dean's list at PCC.
Yes.
And that you, Fionn, are on the honor list at PCC. All the things going on in your life, I think that's pretty amazing. Can we give these young folks a hand? For this? Thanks for coming in. We appreciate your words.
Thank you.
City Council will come to order. Sue, please call the roll.
Adams, Leonard,
here.
Salzman,
here.
Sten, Potter,
here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity he or she is authorized to represent. Let's begin with the first communications.
Request of Matt Russell to address council regarding World Week for Animals in Laboratories.
Thanks for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Potter and members of the council, my name is Matt Russell, representing In Defense of Animals, IDA. Thank you for this opportunity to discuss World Week for Animals in Labs, an annual event designed to expose the plight of animals used for testing and research. Events around the world seek to educate the public about the scientific, moral, and economic objections to animal experimentation. Right here in our community, OHSU operates the Oregon National Primate Research Center, where more than 4,000 monkeys are being used in invasive experiments. These monkeys are socially complex, extremely intelligent, and have emotional needs similar to ours. That is why, when kept in stark laboratories, they exhibit abnormal behaviors such as depression, aggression, hair pulling, circling and pacing, and can even become psychotic, biting and attacking their own bodies. I worked for 2 years at the Primate Center trying to make changes from within. I witnessed mistakes in research, ongoing violations of the Animal Welfare Act, ridiculous research projects that couldn't possibly help people, and an assembly line approach that is failing to meet the monkeys' needs. Oregon's USDA inspector at the time was by my side and backing me up when the videotaped abuses were revealed to the public. OHSU claims that changes have been made since then, but it is very difficult to know for sure. OHSU is not always forthcoming about what is really going on, as you are well aware from the escalated costs of the tram and the overblown projections of our public biotech investments. IDA had to sue OHSU under Oregon's public records law to receive monkey health records, which we now are in the process of reviewing. But better than catching OHSU doing something wrong, we want to encourage OHSU to do the right thing. And so this week, IDA is proposing that OHSU adopt a reasonable plan to reallocate 5% of their research dollars annually away from animal research towards more reliable clinical-based research. Alarmingly, OHSU's primate census has gone up by more than 40% since 2000. Cutting-edge technology has forged new frontiers such as lasers, fiber optics, microchips, genomics, computer-based drug design, and digital imaging, all of which have launched a technological revolution in biomedical research. Through my work, I have had the honor of becoming friends with Dr. Jane Goodall, world's most renowned primatologist, and she has had this to say recently about animal experimentation. And I quote, "I think we have to find other ways of doing experiments other than using live animals as soon as we can. There is not enough incentive for abandoning animal testing. There is a sort of implicit desire to maintain the status quo because it's easier that way," end quote. We are not lacking the technology to replace animals. What we are lacking is the commitment. By embracing the reallocation initiative, science and medicine will move forward, enhancing human health and well-being while sparing animal life. IDA will be sending city leaders copies of this proposal, and we are asking that you all take a lead in encouraging OHSU to adopt this reallocation initiative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 421, request of Amanda Fritz to address council regarding Measure 26-90, Civil Service Charter Changes.
Thank you for being here. Please state your name when you speak, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning. I'm Amanda Fritz. I'm addressing my comments to the citizens of Portland, urging you to vote no on all four ballot measures in the May election. Portland's charter is our constitution. If you haven't read the current charter and all the proposed changes, please vote no. The glossy mailers arriving in Portland's households this week are slick PR designed to influence voters rather than give accurate information. For example, the proponents of Measure 2690, which would severely reduce Portland's civil service protections, is being touted as streamlining and modernizing outdated language. I've provided to the council copies of some of the language cut by Measure 2690. Copies for people here are at the table, and I'll read it for viewers at home. It is the purpose of the civil service chapter to establish for the city a system of personnel administration which provides all citizens with a fair and equal opportunity for public service. It establishes conditions of service which will attract and retain employees of good character, technical knowledge, skill, and ability. And it improves efficiency and economy of the agencies of city service by the improvement of methods of personnel administration. Measure 2690 would eliminate this language with no substitute purpose or goal statement. It leaps into details without stating the core values. What is outdated about this language? We want a charter that provides all citizens with a fair and equal opportunity for public service. We want to attract and retain employees of good character, technical knowledge, skills, and abilities. We want to improve economies and efficiencies of city agencies. If you vote yes on Measure 2690, you will be saying that those goals are no longer important for Portland. The Constitution should set the broad value, leaving the details for later. Measure 2690 does the opposite. Worse yet, 2690 would return the city to the system of political patronage and favoritism the civil service chapter was written to correct. It would allow way more employees to be fired at will by politicians with personal agendas influenced by powerful special interests. Employees advocating for the public could be reclassified as supervisors and fired. That is not in the public interest. And Measure 2690 picks on the most vulnerable of city employees, the temporary workers. Those blue-collar workers have no protections except the current language in the charter that sets a standard implementing the core value that we want our city staffed by people committed to public service with permanent employees. By eliminating this standard while at the same time removing the purpose statement setting the constitutional values we want for city employment, Measure 2690 opens the door to a return to the corrupt system the civil service chapter was written to reform. Measure 2690 isn't reform. It isn't updating or modernizing. It gives more power to special interests, more power to politicians, and less protection for working people and citizens throughout Portland. Please vote no on 2690.
Please read the next.
Item 422, request of John Ryan to address council regarding quantification tool and a pocket of corruption.
Good morning. Thanks for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. Good morning. My name is John Ryan, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Some of my work, I wrote some thoughts on corporate change in 1999 and the innovation culture of Gateway, given to Mayor Katz in 2004, that became part of the Bureau of Innovation Projects and a pre-filter specification for public involvement, and that contains a mysterious footnote. In March, I testified about a method to provide a uniform basis for communication and judgment. Items like charter view can be on objective footing. From those documents and another one called A Guide to Accompany the Unified Field, I introduced some concepts. Mapping had nothing to do with a roadmap, and given the brevity of this forum, I'm not going to go into that, but it gives an idea of completeness, an idea of what is possible so that we can evaluate these issues on objective footing. I've been in touch with the media about that. Another thing that I introduced was called an economy of efficiency, and that's not efficiency in the usual sense, but that is forthcoming. The mysterious footnote that I would like to unveil now, as you can see in the document in front of you, is called D'Alembert's principle, and I won't go into that because of the brevity of this forum, but I would urge you to look at what that means. To the point of this testimony, there were some things that happened in Bureau Innovation Project number 9. In keeping with a past MO, there was a criminally negligent attorney who became a corrupt judge, and he hired or he enlisted a pro tem judge to help him, and that judge signed some kind of order. It's in his interest to exert some pressure on me. Normally, this wouldn't be a city council issue, but because of the work that I've done in city council and things like public involvement that it's already impacted, I'm looking I'm asking for some help. And we can think of this in terms of win-win or lose-lose. I have a question for you. If you had anything to quantify, anything at all to make transparent so that people could look at it objectively, what would it be? There was a talk of a document explaining some changes and the rationale for the charter review. I hope that comes out. The charter review website has been shut down for some time, and it seemed to me in sitting in on a number of those meetings, there were some of the sociologic aspects that make Portland a great place to live were missing. And again, if you had anything to quantify, anything to make transparent, what would it be? Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Item 423, accept the report Sustainable Development Commission Activities.
I do have to read in there that because we have two commissioners missing, we will not be voting on the consent agenda until tomorrow afternoon.
Correct. And item 423, accept the report Sustainable Development Commission Activities November 2005 through March 2007.
Could you read the second one too, please?
And item 424, accept the report of the Sustainable Development Commission, PDX, the World Sustainability Center, a blueprint for global leadership and sustainable economic development.
Mr. Salzman.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and member of council. As we've been working hard to drive Portland towards a unified vision of sustainability, we've seen the city's efforts rise from nearly every direction, from biofuels to green streets, to the Peak Oil Initiative, we've been responding to our duty of environmental stewardship. Today, we're going to hear from the Sustainable Development Commission, which is a joint body appointed by the County Commission and by the City Council to advise us on these matters. And they are going to provide us two reports, one which documents the Commission's progress in the last 2 years and which outlines their plans for the next year, and another report from the Committee's Economic Development Committee, entitled PDX, the World's Sustainability Center, which guides the city and a county in a plan for sustainable economic development. What are the challenges facing businesses? They wanted to know. More importantly, what are the opportunities? These answers, which led to the recommendations in this report, come from interviews of over 20 business, academic, and community leaders. The suggestions in this report, some of which include new partnerships between city bureaus, establishing a one-stop center for sustainable business practices, and environmental performance standards for new commercial construction. And I should say that on the one-stop center for sustainable business practices, that is contained in the mayor's proposed budget at this point. These are just the types of creative and bold recommendations we need if we want our city to reach the next level. I want to thank the Sustainable Development Commission for reaching out to business community and for their work on this report, and also for the interviews and sharing their knowledge and ideas. So we have three members here with us today from the commission: Cameron Burney, Ray Cook, and Kent Snyder. And you're going to present in some order. I don't know which. Okay, we'll start with Ray Cook.
Mayor Potter, members of the council, my name is Cameron Burney, a member of the Sustainable Development Commission. First of all, thank all of you and even the two who aren't here today for their interest in continuing in the Sustainable Development Commission and its progress along the way. The commission's 11 members, six appointed by city council, five appointed by the county commission, appreciate their opportunity to volunteer and be engaged on such an important topic as sustainability. They have been meeting regularly, monthly, and even more with staff from city bureaus, county departments, as well as with knowledgeable citizens and interest groups who are all working together to implement sustainability in local government. As Commissioner Saltzman has already outlined, today we will bring you two reports for your consideration and acceptance. I believe these reports have been included in your packets. The first report I would like to draw your attention to is a summary of our activities from the time of the most recent inception, November 2005 through March of 2007. I believe it has kind of an orange line near the top of the page that's before you. Our efforts have been focused on three main areas. Number one, promoting sustainable internal government operations, which I will talk about shortly. Number two, creating an education campaign about sustainability, which Roy Cook will overview for you after I finish. And number three, supporting sustainable economic development, which Kent Snyder, on my right, on your left, along with some local business leaders, will highlight for you. On to the first topic, sustainable government. I guess this is the my primary focus since I've been on the commission, my primary interest. I'm a retired executive from state government. Having interacted with some of you, including Senator Leonard, Representative Leonard, down in Salem for many times, many years, I had much involvement overseeing state purchasing, state motor pool, printing, and I was put in a sustainability leadership role by Governor Kitzhaber, as well as Governor Kulongowski, and were successful in launching several sustainability efforts. All the time, knowledgeable and in amazement at what the city and council, city and county were doing in their sustainability efforts. I suppose my primary emphasis while in Salem, and it's one of my chief interests now, would be, as I mentioned to the county commission last week, was collaborative purchasing in this increased time of more and more penny pinching with budget deficits. Collaborative purchasing whenever you can do it, not just with fellow governments in the Portland area, but with state governments and beyond. The greater the purchasing volume that's developed through collaboration, up to and including such things as an organization called the Western States Contracting Alliance, which includes, I believe it's 15 Western states. Number one, the greater the opportunity to be able to leverage manufacturers to put in their specifications sustainable elements. And number two, obviously, the greater per savings, per item savings that can result. But Portland's city government has a long track record of seeking to gain financial and environmental benefits from implementing sustainability best practices in its operations and management. I'm aware that in previous presentations from staff, the council has heard about the impressive work bureaus have performed in areas relating to energy efficiency, renewables, construction debris, recycling, pesticide reduction, and alternative fuels. Portland is a leader in these areas. The commission has worked closely with city and county staff, as well as other community stakeholders, to provide guidance on sustainable government efforts. For example, the commission has reviewed and provided input into the Vision PDX effort, the city's urban forest management plan, the joint city-county toxics reduction strategy, and the Sustainable City Government Partnership. The commission is particularly excited about the city council's adoption of the Sustainable City Government Partnership. As an aside, several commission members will serve on this partnership leadership team, and we're very excited about being involved in this endeavor. Basically, that concludes my items, my remarks, and I'd like to turn my presentation over to Roy Cook to continue.
Thanks. My name is Roy Cook. I'm a member of the Sustainable Development Commission and the Provost and Professor of Environmental Science and Engineering at Portland State University. I'd like to take a few minutes to report on one of the other major initiatives at the Sustainable Development Commission that we carried out with the able assistance, I should note, of the staff of the Office of Sustainable Development. We certainly couldn't do this work without them. And that's called Signs of Sustainability. In our role as advisors to both the city and the county on these sustainability issues, we really believe that there is a need to measure and evaluate progress of developing sustainable practices and how those practices are changing the nature of the community. However, rather than take what's the typical approach of defining some relatively abstract measures of improvements in sustainability, measuring chemistry of water quality or those sorts of things, we're actually hoping to identify at least some measures that are associated with actions that real people can take to reflect sustainable practices and to provide guidance and encouragement for both citizens and business to develop a more sustainable community and at the same time be indicators of our progress. Sustainability is a really broad term, and it's oftentimes difficult to define, and people are often confused and sometimes overwhelmed in terms of what to do. Many, if not most citizens, especially in Portland, are eager to become engaged in sustainability, but they often say they need more information. They need to know specifically what can they do that really matters to promote sustainability. Now, it's a lot easier here in Portland than most places, I have to admit that. But making sustainability tangible and assisting citizens and businesses in understanding it and taking steps towards sustainable practices was one of the goals of our project. So the project was carried forward by pulling together experts from business, from government, from nonprofit organizations to develop some compelling and measurable indicators, many of which are very action-oriented by the local citizens and businesses. We looked at three specific components of sustainability: the ecosystem health, human and community health, and social and economic health. To date, and through this process, we've identified many possible indicators, but selected a smaller list of just 15 signs of sustainability. Rather than go through the entire 15, I'll note a couple of examples. One that has been proposed is the percent of urban forest cover canopy by neighborhood over time. In other words, a change in the urban forest canopy. This is something for which Portland is well known. And the forest canopy affects issues like land, air, water quality, livability, and even economic development. Another sign of sustainability is the percentage of kids that can walk or bike to school. This affects everything from children's health and air emissions to community engagement and safety. Another might be, what is the percentage of seasonal food dollars spent at farmers' markets, something that is very prevalent in Portland. This has broad implications for sustainability around the environment in terms of agricultural practices, in terms of human health related to organic foods, in terms of community health in terms of community building and interaction. So a lot of our indicators have these sort of multiple benefits and really allow citizens a way to think about participating. A number of these signs draw on data that is regularly and already collected. Others, we're going to have to develop measures or ways to collect the data, for example, the participation in farmers' markets. But that's one of the next phases of our ongoing work. These signs are already being used by some others. For example, as we understand it, there is a local radio station that's developing a sustainability campaign called One Thing, and it's based on these signs of sustainability. The Planning Bureau is using these signs as part of their work on the new Central City Plan, and the project also complements the work of Vision PDX. The Signs of Sustainability project is all about providing citizens and businesses relatively simple actions that promote sustainability and communicating in a clear and understandable way how people can get involved, and also providing us a way of measuring increases in these activities. So we'll continue to look at opportunities to use them in partnership with other efforts and tell people more about sustainability.
Good morning. My name is Kent Snyder. I'm a business owner, a member of the Sustainable Development Commission, and been chairing the Economic Development Committee of that commission. I'll give you a couple context facts here, most of which you already know. Do you know that the investment in wind and solar power was almost $25 billion in 2005? That was a 50% increase over 2004. You know that investment in clean energy technologies, it's renewable energy, hybrids, nanotechnologies, just in the Silicon Valley alone jumped from $34 million in the first quarter of 2006 to $290 million in the third quarter of 2006. Overall, venture capital in Silicon Valley in the clean tech area grew by $1 billion from 2005 to 2006, and there's been major job growth that's starting to erase some of the dot-com effects when the bubble burst. I mean, I can assure you that you know that Portland has an international reputation for green building, for sustainable urban development, for recycling, for energy efficiency, and a whole host of other sustainable business practices. A recent example, last week you adopted the Green Streets policy, and I know you heard testimony from people about the economic development effects that grow out of that and the reputation that the city has garnered from there nationally, regionally, as well as internationally. So over the last 2 years, what we've seen is there's been a sea change in both the awareness of and the sentiments about sustainability publicly, including the 800-pound gorilla climate change. Smart businesses globally and governments are seeing what is happening, and they're not just adapting to what's happening. They are seizing opportunities, as Commissioner Saltzman said. The seizing the opportunities that this represents in the marketplace, and we are at the onset of a massive economic transformation. Given this transformation, the question really the committee and the commission has been looking at and grappling with is, given these changes in our economy, the changes in the environment, how do we as Portland seize the opportunity and use it to our advantage to help our community thrive? When your commission talks about economic development, we don't use it in that concept in the traditional stodgy ideas of just manufacturing jobs, making things, processing things. To us, we're talking about economic vitality, stability, be it economic fecundity, you know, healthy growth. We have a comparative advantage globally and nationally and regionally. So the question really then is, what do we do? So we said, well, let's apply some basic business tools. Let's assess this. Let's come up with a plan, engage in the execution of that, measurements and adaptions and adjustments as you go along. So we went and did this process, the reports that you have. I'll go through a couple of points on there. But we, as Commissioner Saltzman said, we our business people in our own right, and we then went out and talked to a number of other businesses to find out what their views of this, how they're taking advantage of these opportunities, what obstacles they're encountering, what suggestions they have. And from all that, we've developed a plan that's contained in the report. You're going to hear from a couple of the business people in a moment. although the plan is really organized into three areas, we think that the commission believes you must keep three overriding considerations in view that we heard over and over and over from the people we talked with. Number one, think beyond exports. This is not, again, traditional economic development is goods and services for export. This is a much more broader vision. Talk about community livability, natural resource base, ecological services, and things. So think broadly. Second, clearly articulate an audacious vision. We heard that repeatedly. And lastly, implement the vision, dedicate resources, both financial resources, staff resources, collaborative efforts and things to actually implementing and achieving that vision. The three main areas then that we broke this into some more policy recommendations and some specific task, more targeted activities, or go into the three areas. One is tapping into the global demand for sustainable industries. In that area, I want to point out a couple of things. We heard repeatedly of the obstacles in permitting in the green building area. We also heard about the things that our price signals are wrong. As a business owner, I'm taxed for the work that I and my employees do. I'm not taxed for which I think we want people to work. We want to have that kind of economic activity. But we're not taxing, or we're not shifting and saying we don't want these kinds of emissions, carbon emissions, pollution, et cetera. So there's been a lot of discussion about how you're going about doing that. So we're recommending that we actually look at how do we replace the business license fees, the taxes and things that are on our economic activities that we do want, and how we replace those with fees and costs and things that on things that we really don't want, and we get those signals correct. We are also directing the city county staff to explore options for a city countywide policy requiring environmental performance standards for all new commercial construction. In the areas of fostering regional collaboration, there are many, many opportunities. In the cluster concept, I mean, you're really talking about relationships that are relationships between businesses, relationships between the businesses and the institutions that are supporting them. You're talking about ideas, and you're talking about place. The city's economic development strategies need to look at what can be done to strengthen the relationships within the businesses that are involved in sound, sustainable business practices, and those are also producing technologies and services. For example, the Oregon Business Council, the Oregon Business Plan has a lot of sustainability that's been incorporated in the sustainable business, into the business plan, and they've been talking for a long time about a sustainable development summit. That's something that the city can collaborate with and the county in making something like that happen. There are many, many opportunities in there, and we've again laid out a number of recommendations for activities there. The last one really is the area of growing the local foundation for innovation. One of the key components we think is there is analyze and document the economic impact of the various factors contributing to our high quality of livability, things that are attracting businesses to being here, the reason why businesses are growing here. Some of these factors including access to parks, trails, natural areas, clean water, and access to nature, etc. There are good resources available in BES and water, good technology, good people at Reed College, elsewhere. Dave and Evans and Associates making a lot of money doing things and how you deal with ecological services. So there's how you support from an economic development strategy, those kinds of activities. So again, the overriding considerations are think broadly. We need an audacious vision, and we need to commit the resources to do that. Quoting from an editorial in the Oregonian on April 7th, Portland was green early, yes, but this is not the moment to dwell on Portland's advantage. Instead, it is the moment to capitalize on it. And I would like, with that, to call up, we have some other business people in town who are involved with this, our discussions. And Michelle, are they all here? So we have David Prowse, and Selena Deckelman. And then we'll have a couple more. And Lois? Lois Gordon of Ecos Consulting.
Hey, good morning. I'm David Brouse. I'm the production manager at King Cycle Group, and with me is Selena Deckelman, who's the IT manager at King Cycle. Thanks for having us here today. We participated in this survey that led to this report and wanted to come emphasize some points we think were particularly important. It's clear, as a city, community, and culture, we need to figure out how to be sustainable. This report provides a good framework for starting towards that goal, and we agree that the city should pursue it. This effort needs to be a systematic, bottom-up approach focused on sustainable practices. It doesn't necessarily matter what is being made or done. More important is how it is done. An organization's processes drive its impact on sustainability, regardless of the product or industry. To develop sustainable practices throughout an organization, everyone must be involved. The push for sustainability should be fundamental in how everyone thinks about things, fundamental in how everyone responds to issues, and fundamental on how everyone makes decisions. Pursuing sustainability can't be a brand or a department. Sustainability needs to be a core value in which everyone in the organization believes.
All right. As David mentioned, my name is Selena Deckelman, and I'm IT manager for King Cycle Group. This right here is something that we make. It's a headset, and it goes on a bike. About 32 years ago, Chris King made his first headset from ball bearings someone else threw away. He was trying to solve a problem. Headsets never lasted for more than a season, but he ended up solving two. He saved something from the trash and created something useful for himself and for his friends. This is another way to think about sustainability. It's using what you have to solve your problems. So what can Portland use, what can Portland use that it has already to solve the sustainability problem? Echoing what Cameron just said, one thing Portland has is purchasing power. The city can buy local. The city can use 100% post-consumer paper products. Each purchasing decision makes a statement about what the city believes. That is, what we buy must reflect the core value of sustainability. The city also has the power to regulate. The SDC recommendations included ending the waivers for non-lead construction and actively encouraging businesses to reduce water that they send into the stormwater management system. We were enticed to come to Portland by a business-friendly and progressive environment. However, we have experienced...
Could you repeat that? I didn't quite hear you.
Sorry. Oh, about the water management?
Or the business-friendly and...
Oh, particularly by Commissioner Leonard.
You don't hear that a lot, so that's nice to hear.
Chris said it last night. However, we have experienced what Brian Roeder, CEO of New Seasons, called, quote, a mismatch between the region's progressive vision and the permitting process, end quote. To bring the vision and the practice together, the city needs to streamline the permitting process for green.
I heard you the first time.
Okay. All right. To bring the vision and the practice together, the city needs to streamline the permitting process for green building projects, please. Finally, my last point was the city should make sustainability everyone's job. Solicit change in the city by asking people at the bottom of the organization what they think can or should change. Then empower those people at the lowest possible level to decide and make those changes. Thank you for your time today.
Hello, my name's Lois Gordon. I'm the president and CEO of Ecos Consulting. We're an 80-person, $10 million energy consulting firm having our 10th anniversary headquartered in Portland. First, I'd like to echo our support for the vision laid out in the report. Sustainable economic development as an overarching strategy for promoting economic growth for Ecos is exactly what we need. Ecos, like many sustainable businesses in Portland, was created by passionate entrepreneurs with a sense of urgency around protecting the environment. Our modest beginnings did not include venture capital or fast-paced MBA management. But there's no denying that today, opportunities exist for Ecos and other sustainability companies in Portland that are significant and global in nature. There are solid recommendations in this report that will spur economic growth for ECOS as well as for Portland. While I support most of the recommendations in the report wholeheartedly, I'd like to focus on a couple specifics. First, in recommendation one, in tapping into the global demand for sustainable industries. In particular, I'd like to encourage you to quickly develop a matching investment program that leverages private venture capital and other types of capital funds for sustainable industries. The marketplace now is intrigued with investment into sustainable industries. There's billions and billions of dollars from investors. They're looking for where to spend their money. I would like it to be spent, a great portion of it, in Portland and some of it with ECOS, and we will be looking for this capital in the next 12 months. On recommendation number two, in fostering regional collaboration, now, the sustainability community of businesses is somewhat unique. We're used to collaboration. We like to work together. Most of the companies, however, are small or medium in size, and as such, we have common business issues that really can benefit from a networking opportunity together. To grow our companies and achieve the impacts we each strive to create, we need mentorship opportunities and business-related tools. At ECOS, I've made it a personal mission to collaborate with other local sustainable companies and share what we can across our learnings. This is very grassroots and needs to be taken up to a citywide supported effort. I do encourage you to prioritize the success of existing sustainable companies within Portland. While there are a number of emerging companies, you have a wealth sitting right here of companies that are just yearning for a little bit of support and who will become great economic engines. Finally, on cultivating a regional support, Portland has a viable sustainability brand. And while I do fully agree that sustainability needs to be a core value, brand is a very important thing to both develop and own. If we don't do it here in Portland, other cities with the pressure of the 800-pound climate change gorilla will. That would be a sad loss for Portland. I think that we can benefit from this brand when we sell into the national marketplace. ECOS leverages it today. We do have a national clientele. However, our brand needs cultivation and further development. A great example people use with me is Coke never stops developing and supporting its brand. Such a brand will easily leverage into economic development opportunities for us, ECOS specifically, and our entire community. Efforts such as the PDX Lounge and Global Cities are excellent opportunities that we are taking advantage of and we would like to see many more offered. So I encourage us to seize the opportunity to own the brand as well as support the rest of this plan to create sustainability as a core value. Thank you.
I thought I would just mention that when I met with Chris King a few years ago to talk about them, you guys relocating from California to here, and we were showing him some of the requirements that would be for the site in Northwest that you chose in terms of green stuff. He not only said, that's not a problem, we will exceed whatever the requirements are. I had never heard anybody in any of the meetings I had in recruitments ever say anything quite the opposite, more, why do we have to do this, why do we have to do that? So he really, truly, I was very impressed, and so impressed that that evening I was home talking about it, and my oldest son, who is 31 now but was probably 27 or so then, I mentioned King Cycle, and he said, you met Chris King? Said, yeah. He said, where did you meet Chris King? He said, he was in my office. I said, you're kidding. So he said he's like the rock star of cycle groupies and the world. And I went on the website, and we're really pleased to have that. You're really international headquarters here in Portland. It's very cool, and you have a lot of fans.
Well, we're glad to be here.
Yeah,
and
glad.
It is interesting that Chris isn't driven by government regulations. He's driven by what he thinks is the right thing to do.
No, it was very evident.
Across the board. So.
I really appreciated that approach.
I also wanted to congratulate Lois Gordon, because just last week ECOS received a City of Portland Best Award, Businesses for Environmentally Sustainable Tomorrow. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks, folks. Is that it?
One more person?
Real quick.
Morning. I'm Alan Lee. I'm a project director at Quantec in Portland. We're a 50-plus person energy consulting environmental firm and growing. I just wanted to make a few comments to commend the Sustainable Development Commission for this report, the Blueprint on Economic Development. I was a member of the preceding Sustainable Development Commission. This is one of the areas that we highlighted for focus and worked very hard and diligently with the Portland Development Commission to make sure that they included sustainable businesses as one of their target areas. I'm very glad to see this report has come out and a lot of those ideas have been built upon. Kind of echoing some of Kent's comments, I was very struck by a couple of the major items listed at the front of the document in terms of overarching considerations. I think they're very important, and it's hard to keep them in mind and weave them in and translate them into specific activities and programs and policies, but I think they're very crucial. And one is taking a look at economic development, not just in terms of having more exports from the region, but in terms of doing that in balance with keeping and maintaining the kind of livability, ecological, and human health that we want to have in the area. And the other area that I was really struck by was the requirement or recommendation for audacious vision. I've heard in the last couple of days Dennis Wild recommend to BOMA that they have a LEED goal requirement for their Class A buildings. That's what I call an audacious requirement. It's something that he thinks could start in Portland and set the trend nationally. Just kind of along those lines, Quantec, through our president, Sammy Khawaja, was very committed when we moved downtown. We went through the G-rated program to get our office space upgraded under the city's program. And one of the things we did was move into an existing building and try to set an example. And since then, we've gone and met with every tenant in our building, talked to them about purchasing green power through Pacific Core, and since we were buying green power, we moved into the building, and we've gotten about 45% of the people signed up in the building. And when we talked to the building manager, they said, why don't we just sign up the whole building and roll it into the rent? And I said, hey, great idea, no problem. That hasn't happened yet, but when it does, it will be the first building in Pacific Core, so the first large office building in Pacific Core service area that's in their green power program. Just to highlight some of the recommendations in the report that I thought were very, very good and really need a lot of attention. One was the replacement of fees and taxes and redirection to encourage the goods and discourage the bads. It seems like a no-brainer, but this is something that's very rarely implemented. I really encourage the city to find ways to try to do that to make sure that translating policy and preferences into the dollars where it counts on businesses are going to have the kinds of effects that are really critical for sustainability. The focus on city and county working together, I think, is very important. I'm glad to see that the commission a few years ago brought the county in, and it's a joint commission now, and I think there are a lot of opportunities for kind of leveraging that working relationship. The public-private collaborations is another example I think that the city should strongly pursue, things like the PDX Lounge, and also the idea of a sustainability brand. As Lois was saying earlier, Portland has that kind of brand or that image, but it's something that we're going to have a lot of competition for, and we need to stay out in front and do the kinds of things that make Portland special. Also, as a kind of a analyst geek, I really was supportive of the idea of documenting the economic savings and the multiple objectives of sustainable economic development. I think that's critical to make the case for that, and anything the city can do to support that, maybe working with Portland State and others to document what the benefits are, because in the end, that's what has to be sold to the public. And then another area I thought was really important was investing in sustainable industries workforce. There's a program down in Oakland area that Van Jones runs under the Ella Baker Center, and it focuses on kind of inner city youth and communities and developing what he calls green collar jobs among those communities. I like to see the city talk to the folks in Oakland and other areas and see if similar things can be done here. And just kind of in wrapping up, I haven't said too much about our company, but Quantech has grown from 12 to 50 people in the last 3 years. And we expect to continue growing because we focus on energy, and energy is a pretty important issue. But we're also looking at related issues like greenhouse gases. We're also doing some work in the lead prevention and remediation area, which we see as a real social issue. As far as kinds of things that have that the city's done that have helped us, the best awards, Quantech was able to win two of those, and that's something that it's very hard to put a specific value on and translate it into business, but I think the one area where it's clearest to me that it has been beneficial is when we are interviewing people for employment, or the people who come to us and are interested in working at Quantech, or people who have seen that we got a best award, and that's something that they are really interested in. So it's kind of a culture, and it's generally the best and the rightest people that we get. And then one other thing, just in terms of providing assistance, when we were looking to move our office space, we were fortunate enough to have Ann Griffin from Portland Development Commission, at least she was with the PDC at that time, and she came and helped us and looked at some opportunities for financing and ways that we might get funding to support our move and to move into a green office space and so on. That didn't all work out, but it was a great service. I'd like to see that provided through the city in other ways, kind of along the lines that Lois was talking about. And even though that didn't work out in the end, we wound up hiring Ann, so that worked out.
That's where she went.
In the committee and the commission, thank you for the opportunity to present this. We're more than willing to continue to work on this and hope that the city council embraces and takes this forward. And we're available for questions if you have any.
Is there a sign-up sheet, Sue?
Yes, and we did have one from the general public sign up. That was John Ryan, if he's still here. Okay, he's gone.
Thank you. 423, this report, I need a motion to accept.
So move.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Leonard.
Well, I am really pleased that Portland isn't just attempting to be a leader nationally on sustainability, but I think really is a leader on all of the various levels that Commissioner Saltzman identified in his opening remarks. But I am struck with an article I just read in the front page of the Oregonian today on Toyota overcoming GM in total sales of vehicles. And the message that sent me is that American industry still just does not get it. They continue to produce vehicles like the Hummer in the name of satisfying consumer demand, whereas they consistently and simultaneously fight, in a separate article, this was discussed this morning, the CAFE standards for vehicles, the miles per gallon required by the federal government for vehicles, whereas Japan has no such standards. They just figured out that if you build good, efficient cars, people will buy them. And why somebody at GM hasn't just bought a Toyota Camry and disassembled it to figure out how to build one like that is beyond me. And not got that. And it was just really sad to read the comments of a worker from GM in this article today that said, you know, it's just the American consumer doesn't get it. And it couldn't be more opposite. We can do and should do what we're doing, but unless American industry gets that people really do what's right more often, but if they can also do it right, what's right, and save money, that's what they want to do. So people like to buy Toyota and Honda vehicles because they're well-made and they're very energy efficient. And why the American auto manufacturer hasn't figured that out is stunning in its impact on all these issues we're trying to address, because as good as we can do and as much as we can do, the truth is that the automobile in the world is the greatest production of greenhouse gases and the greatest consumer of petroleum fuels, and that has to change. So I mean, that you're preaching to the choir here, obviously, And we obviously agree not only with all the work you're doing, but we do want to take advantage of a lot of this kind